Hello, TSF family. We wanted to start off by saying thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for your hard work to love yourself more and for your feedback.
Can you believe it's been 3 years that we've been doing this spiritual fix, and it has been such a beautiful labor of love for Anna and me.
We have loved doing this work. We've loved hearing from you, and we love exploring ourselves and each other alongside our listeners.
We wanted to put out the call for 3 ways that you can help support us to support you.
One, we would love you to leave us a review on iTunes or follow us on Spotify.
2, drop us an email and let us know how much the podcast means to you.
And 3, you can donate monthly or even just once to our PayPal patronage.
Every little bit helps, and we are so grateful to those of you who have donated already. Thank you.
You help make this podcast possible.
Thanks, y'all.
You can go to our website, www.thisspiritualfix.com, for information on how to pledge as well as to email us.
Hello, TSF family, and welcome to episode 13 of season 7, which should be episode 5, in which we will play the Vengeful Martyr, a huge lesson from the universe to me to pay attention to the Vengeful Martyr. Enjoy, y'all. Hello, TSF family, and welcome to episode 5 of season 7 of This Spiritual Fix. Today, we are continuing our inner villain journey with the 2, the Vengeful Martyr, also known as the Abandonment Wound, and the Undefined Sacral Center in Human Design. We hope you all enjoy. Thanks.
Hypnosis. Mindfulness. Meditation.
Mama, 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 mama.
Past life regression.
Mommy, can
RTG.
You play?
Spirituality.
This spiritual fix. 2 mystical mamas hacking the self-help game.
With Anna Stromquist.
And Christine.
Hello, Anna.
Hello, Vengeful Martyr.
I should be saying that to you.
Am I the Vengeful Martyr?
Is it?
Oh, I am. Okay. Hello.
Hello. Yes, welcome to our villain series. Now we are on our second villain, the Vengeful Martyr, which...
Oh, it is me. I'm reading your summary.
The Vengeful Martyr, which is the 2 in the Enneagram, which is also known as the Helper. It is the representative of the sacral center in human design. So the one that projectors don't have, which is
what I have.
Right. So an undefined sacral center. Projectors and manifestors, neither of them actually have access to a defined sacral center, which is all about a consistent source of energy. And it is also the representative of the abandonment wound. And it is in general and it's the second half of the codependent cycle, which we saw in the obedient critic and the vengeful martyr. 2 different ways of kind of dealing with the same thing. So.
Wait, who's the bad guy in this? So we had Nurse Ratched was
Darth Vader. It's actually Anakin Skywalker. / Darth Vader, and I'll kind of describe it because...
I'm not familiar with Star Wars.
Yeah, I'm going to only slightly nerd out for like 30 seconds.
Nerd it all up. I love nerds.
I actually just did a YouTube video essay on this. I've been doing video essays on the villains to try and help people understand by using commonly understood stories that are like from movies and stuff like that. So I've done Wanda Maximoff and Loki and Agatha Harkness and Elphaba and Glinda, and then I did Anakin Skywalker. And the basic idea is that Darth Vader was created because he abandoned his mother. His mother ended up dying because he wasn't there for her, so he experienced a lot of abandonment with his mother. And then he gets this vision that his wife and love and his children are gonna die. And so he loses his shit because he's going to be abandoned and he hasn't actually dealt with his codependent tendencies. And so he goes to the dark side, which is anger. It's that vengeful part of the martyr. It's like he's very much so a martyr, trying to like constantly give and be a good Jedi. And these are all things that happen in the prequels. And then as soon as he is afraid of abandonment, that's when he turns to the dark side and becomes vengeful and he kills all of the little baby Jedis. He completely destroys the entire Jedi Order. Because he's like...
I didn't know he killed babies?
Oh, yeah. He killed Jedi Padawan, which are like young children.
Why?
Because he was told that that was the only way that he could prevent being abandoned. Yeah.
It's giving Pharaoh vibes.
Yeah. All right. So The Vengeful Martyr themselves, they're called the Vengeful Martyr because what they do is they, as I kind of described, they kill all the Padawans in the Jedi Temple whenever they haven't been taken care of. So, Anna, this is the dragon that you've described.
Oh, the Rage Monster, as we're going to learn about in the Alison Armstrong episode.
The Rage Monster. It is 100% that. It is like, I haven't been taken care of. I am due. I am owed the debt of all the work that I've done for every other person.
I will burn it all down.
And I'm going to burn it all down. I'm going to kill all the Padawans in the Jedi Temple, and I'm going to burn it all down. And that is exactly what the Vengeful Martyr looks like when they're in their kind of worst form. So the three subtypes of this, which are the three of the drama triangle that come off of this, the successful antagonist, which is the equivalent of the persecutor, is the banker. They tally their good deeds and expect repayment.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I have a, when I did internal family systems, I think she's called the accountant. Now I'm never forgetting.
Yeah.
But I have, in my internal family systems, I have like a dominant personality in there, and she is like the scorekeeper.
Yes, that's exactly it. It's the scorekeeper. The thing that's fascinating though is that the banker will instigate activities that nobody asked for. It's not just doing things that people need. It's doing things that people don't need or didn't ask for, right? So they're constantly creating credit for themselves.
Right.
But it's not based on a mutually agreed upon outcome or mutually agreed upon task, right?
Yeah, she does that.
Yeah. And so they tally their good deeds. They create more good deeds even when nobody asks for them, and then they expect repayment. And they oftentimes are matched with counter-dependent people, with people who are avoidant. And so the avoidant people are like, you're running around the counter-dependent. And this is what happened at the beginning of the podcast, right? It's like, you're in your intensity, you're doing all this stuff, and I'm not doing nearly enough stuff. And then I felt the wrath. I felt, you remember back when we did all the drama triangle things, I felt the wrath of that, right? Because it was like, you're right, I wasn't doing enough. And I regret how much I didn't do at the beginning of the podcast. It obviously worked out the way that it did. I'm kind of going with the flow of whatever it feels like. I feel like last year I was, or 2 years ago, I guess it was. I feel like once you lost your intensity, I started doing a whole bunch and I was like, I can't keep this up anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a lot.
Now I feel much better about it. But that's the typical thing that happens, right? Is like the Vengeful Martyr will pair up with any of the avoidant ones on this, because the Vengeful Martyr is more of an anxious attachment sort of person. The Wounded Child is the abandoned, and that obviously tracks. They believe that they were left because they weren't enough. So therefore they created a strategy which said that they needed to do as much as they possibly could to get credit, because then no one would leave them and they would finally be enough.
Become indispensable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's really funny because my middle child has always had an abandonment wound since birth.
Yes.
Like, it's just been clear. Even though I haven't actually done anything to create that. Maybe they absorbed it from me. I don't know. But the point is, even now they're learning how to cook. And they'll say things like, well, now everyone will want to be my roommate because I know how to cook.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's already like, I need to make myself indispensable.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
Just, a child is already.
Yeah. Is already displaying the same thing, right?
Yeah,
exactly. The covert, which is the rescuer form, is the apologetic. They withdraw after burnout and they try and over-justify rest. Right. And
okay.
The reason, in many ways, the covert for this one came out for me so clearly is because I've seen you do it. I've seen other people who express the Vengeful Martyr do it, where they're just like, okay, I've done enough. I deserve to rest. And then they never actually rest because they're so worried that somebody's doing something for them, or they think of something else that they should be doing. It's like they try and over justify the need for rest. And then when they finally do,
are given the rest, they don't take it.
They don't take it. Because they say, oh no, I'm fine, or what, I'm okay. Like, it's like they can't get out of that space. I literally have talked to people who are very strong in the Vengeful Martyr who are in the process of dying, and they still do everything for their family, and their family still lets them do everything for them. Right? It's like, it's beyond, right? Like, it's like this pattern is so deeply ingrained, and we think of it as such a beneficial thing because the vengeful martyrs are like the ones who are making so much happen in the world. They're helping so much. They're the ones who are the glue of community in so many different ways. When they're in their better form, they're so much better than that. But they're, you know, if you don't get a hold of it, then you can slowly really create a really bad cycle in which you don't actually know how to rest. You can't sleep. You know, you're having to justify whoever you are. And so that's why the covert is still very much so a subtype of the main villain. So the hero is the selfish. And the selfish is a weird terminology maybe for it. So in order to be able to switch the spin of this villain, to be able to bring out the legend, which is the nourisher, you need to become selfish. And what I mean by selfish is you need to learn the boundary between you and another person. Give and take. Give cannot always perpetually happen, and then take becomes this like vicious kind of cycle in which you're giving, 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 and then you take back because you've created such a vacuum that it's almost like a violent take, mm-hmm. right? You have to give and take every day over time, right? That's the way that you kind of flip this. And so the selfish has to reestablish who they are as a person and do the things that are necessary to keep their selves and to take and to know that they're capable of taking. So it's basically kind of like, imagine that the flow of abundance cannot happen because this is the universe of energy. So this is, whereas the obedient critic was belonging, this one's energy. You cannot create a give without creating a take. You cannot let the flow of abundance happen until you let both of them happen. And so once you flip the polarity of this one, once you start going the opposite direction, that's when you become the nourisher. And the nourisher gives from an overflow, not depletion. Right? Because they have plenty to give because they're taking and giving at the same time. They're drinking while they pour continually. They know who they are. They know who everybody else is. And they know that they're enough. Right? So it's all the work that you did and that we did during the primal wound of abandonment to know that, like, no one can abandon me and I am enough. Right? How much of Marissa Peer's work is about I am enough? It's directly targeting people who are very much more likely to do personal development and self-help work. And therefore, I am enough is going to resonate very strongly with them as the affirmation for this particular villain.
Okay.
Examples of this are Anakin Skywalker, pre-Vader. Fontaine from Les Mis is another example. Fontaine is the woman
that's like, who loves him?
Anne Hathaway. She gave up herself.
Oh, and she sold her teeth.
She sold her teeth. She sold her hair. She sold her body. She sold everything. She gave and gave and gave and gave and gave. Despite the fact that she was giving to people who could never actually receive. Like who would just continually receive all the time.
Okay.
Right? And then she died as a result of it. So she couldn't even do the thing that she wanted to do, which was to be a mother to her daughter. Because in the process of trying to do it, she destroyed herself. She gave so much. She's like the giving tree. The giving tree is another example of this one, mm-hmm. right? It's like the giving tree gave and gave and gave of themselves to this little boy who was never going to be satiated mm-hmm. until he was a very old man. So, yeah. Do you want to read the Am I the Asshole?
Yeah. It's called Am I the Asshole for Not Using My Daughter's College Fund for My Stepson's Addiction? The title basically sums it up, I suppose. My husband and I have been married for 3 years now. I have a daughter, 15 female, and he has a son, 24 male. I am friendly with my stepson, but we are not close. He has a biological mother who is a perfectly fine woman, and I'm not here to take the role of his mom. My late husband, my daughter's father, died when my daughter was 6. We both contributed to her college fund. My daughter's paternal grandparents have also contributed a large amount. Right now, the fund is about $180,000. My daughter is extremely bright, and I'm not just saying that because I'm her mom. I truly believe she has the capacity to go to an Ivy League school, and her teachers have said she has the potential as well, and I don't want costs to hold her back. Our income would be too high to get any meaningful financial aid, and while there are a few merit-based scholarships out there that she'll be applying to, we don't want to put all our eggs in one basket and hope she gets in when it's very competitive.
My current husband and I have separate finances. He doesn't contribute at all to my daughter's fund. I feel like that's important.
Yeah.
My stepson is struggling with a heroin addiction and has stolen money, jewelry, heirlooms, and electronics from us for drug money. I understand that addiction is a disease, and I personally paid for an outpatient detox for him, which cost $1,000, which failed. His father then paid an outpatient rehab program, which cost $6,500, which also didn't work because he barely showed up. He promised us he'd do better next time and he needed another chance, so I split the cost of another $6,500 outpatient rehab with my husband, which seemed to work during program, but he relapsed as soon as he got out. I've spent so much money, time, and energy, and it hasn't helped at all. My husband and my stepson want to try a 60-day inpatient rehab program, which will cost $30,000. I have absolutely no idea where they were supposed to get the money from that, considering the thousands and thousands of dollars that we've already spent and the fact that we no longer had anything of value in our house. They want to use my daughter's college fund, which to me is absolutely off limits. I feel like it's completely unfair to my daughter to punish her for my stepson's addiction, unfair to my late husband and his parents, but frankly, I don't even think spending $30,000 will work. My husband thinks I'm an asshole because I'm prioritizing my daughter's education over his son's lives, and he believes medical needs come first. He then asked my daughter if she'd be willing to use $30,000 from her fund to pay for her stepbrother's rehab, and she got very quiet and did not answer. Smart kid. Like, wow. Yeah. What restraint. He then got very upset with her and said she was being selfish. My daughter later told me that she didn't want to give her stepbrother the money, but she felt so guilty. And I'm furious at my husband for emotionally guilt-tripping my daughter like that.
Right. So there are a lot of villains that show up in this story. The person, the OP, is probably an obedient critic because she's very numbers-based. She's very like, this is the way this needs to be. The stepson is very likely an invisible destroyer who's the most likely to be showing up as the addict, which is the nothing.
That's a different...
These are all different villains from this, right? But the husband is the one that I think is the vengeful martyr in this case, right? In the sense that he's using guilt trip. These are the typical tools of the vengeful martyr, is guilt tripping and doing things that are like, well, I've given so much or I've done everything. It's not the best example of the vengeful martyr. It's honestly really hard to find vengeful martyr examples. But the, but
because the people who write in are the vengeful martyr.
Exactly.
Not the...
Exactly.
They're more victim-based than villain-based.
Yep. Or they're rescuing. And so they're not showing up in these things because everyone thinks the vengeful martyr is a good person. Mm-hmm. Right? But ultimately, they are hurting themselves more than anything. So it's not the best example, but I literally looked all over Reddit trying to find the perfect vengeful martyr example. And this is one of the closer ones that I could find because it was like, okay... I kind of get this. So the best example I could have in this is that the dad is like, I'm going to keep giving and giving and giving to my son, despite the fact that these rehab programs are not working. And despite the fact that it's not actually doing it. And then I'm going to alienate my relationship with my daughter and my wife in an effort to continually give to my stepson.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you can see is that in this case, there's a number of different dynamics going on, but that's the vengeful martyr in this case. So yeah.
It's also a really hard situation to be in.
It's incredibly hard.
He must love his son very much. And, you know, it's a tough situation.
It is. And that's the thing. I think, thank you for saying that. I think it's important to recognize that we're using, am I the asshole, to like kind of characterize other people, to give people an understanding of what it is. But that's not the reason the tool exists. The tool exists for your own self-growth and your own process of moving to self-love within these 9 different areas, and not necessarily for judging other people for who they are. It does help sometimes to be able to do it. And that's one of the things that we've done with the card deck that we're creating, is we're kind of creating it like a game, like a psychodrama game, in which you pick cards and then you interact as a result. Like you would pick the banker, and then someone else would pick the perfectionist from the obedient critic as an example. And then you guys would have an argument, and then you would be like, okay, try and argue about, like, you know, whether or not you're gonna, you know, let your kid have screen time or something like that. Right. And so like recognizing the dynamic is important. I think that's a really important too thing with this legend. And I want to describe this legend, the Nourisher, a little bit better, because it's the sacral center, because it's like all about energy and the flow of energy. it's really, really important to recognize that when you unlock this inside of yourself, when you actually understand the give and the take that exists within the world, and that you are always giving and you're always taking and you're always giving, and that like your contribution is mostly invisible to you, as well as the things that you're taking are mostly invisible to you, you start to let the flow of life move through you in a very different way. And then you can kind of unlock a flow of abundance that you can then turn into resources as you kind of move through this. So it's like all of these represent a strategy that you took when you were, like you said, are they born with it? I don't know. Or is it, you know, I've heard stories of people taking on these villain strategies and they remember the moment they did it.
Really?
Oh my God. Yeah. Like they remember the moment and the moment that I remember, they always say, I remember I was looking in the mirror and I said, I never want to be married. I never want to get married. I always want to be alone because that's going to be easier. And then they just follow that strategy until their life falls apart, because the strategy is not a self-loving strategy, right? Wow. And it's based on a moment of hurt that then gets carried out for the rest of your life as a strategy that you're doing. So that's that. Any thoughts, Vengeful Martyr?
I just want to kind of summarize it all for myself to mm-hmm. make sure I understand. Okay, the Vengeful Martyr is the abandonment wound. And mm-hmm. They try to make themselves indispensable and use guilt traps and these invisible tallies to get what they want. And they're very indirect about it.
Yes.
And then you have the persecutor.
Yep. The successful antagonist, the wounded child, and the covert, which is...
The covert is the rescuer.
Yep.
Okay. And so the rescuer...
is the apologetic.
And mm-hmm. so they're...
They rest... and they need rest, but they're constantly apologizing for it and never actually resting.
Okay.
Right?
How is that rescuing?
They're trying to rescue themselves, because ultimately in this arc, they are the one that gets depleted more so than anything.
Okay.
Right? They're trying to rescue themselves, but because they're trying to rescue themselves, that's not something that they typically do. They don't have the same sense of boundaries and like what they actually need. And they haven't established that they need to be able to drink while they pour. Like they need to, if they're thirsty, they need to drink. And so they're trying to rescue themselves, but they're failing because they're not actually, because they feel they have to justify it. They feel they have to apologize. They feel they have to do everything along those lines.
Okay. The wounded child, that's when they are the victim, and that's when they're like, it's not fair, I did all this for them, and they're not doing it, or it's a fear of abandonment.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. It's usually the origin point. It's like, what did you feel the moment that you started the strategy? You felt abandoned, so you created the strategy in this way.
And then the persecutor would be, I did all this for you, you need to do this for me.
Yep. Okay. We have the tally in the bank.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the rescuer. Could it also be the part of the cycle where they're actively helping others, or no?
They're always actively helping them. They're just showing up in a different way to do that. Does that make sense? Even when they're feeling abandoned, they're still acting, right? Okay, I'll give you an example. Is that like, depending on the environment that I'm in, I might feel like, oh, I'm going to go do this for this person. And what is my motivation for doing this for this person? I'm going to do this for this person because, you know, if I was sick, I'm going to go make soup. I'm exhausted, but I'm going to go make soup for my neighbor because they would want them to do it for me.
Okay.
Right. That's the banker. I'm going to go make soup for this person because,
they don't want them to leave me.
I don't want them to leave me, or they got abandoned themselves. Right. So they're going to be like, I want to go, like, they don't have any family, so I need to go and be their family.
So that's
for them.
The wounded child mm-hmm, one. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then the rescuer one would be like, I want to go make them soup, but I'm so fucking exhausted. I have to rescue myself, but I'm going to literally apologize for weeks after and feel awful
that I didn't make them soup.
So basically like two out of the three times you're making the soup for the person, and what your motivation is for making it is all just a different flavor of the same wound.
Uh-huh.
Right? One of them, you don't do it, but you actually end up paying for it for so long afterwards because you feel so guilty for having not done anything.
Yeah.
It's still just as bad because you don't...
Right, or it's like, I'm just going to do it because the guilt I'm going to feel for not doing it isn't worth it.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like you haven't actually recovered to do anything for yourself because you're feeling the guilt in every other way.
Oh, I know about that. Like when the kids were really little and I'd be like, I really, really, really want to sleep in, but they're like really wanted me. So I would either just get up anyways or I couldn't actually rest because they're crying for me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Or you would apologize for having left them or abandoned them or something like that, even if you did sleep in, and then you'd feel guilty about it the rest of the day and you'd lose any benefit you had from actually sleeping in.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. Okay. Totally relatable.
Awesome. Good. All right. That's it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of This Spiritual Fix. If you are interested in finding out what your primary inner villain is, you can go to www.christinawiltse.com to take the test that is linked. That's KristinaWiltse.com. Thanks, y'all. And remember,
humility, gratitude, acceptance, done.
Hi y'all, Christina from TSF here, This Spiritual Fix. I wanted to invite you to my Substack, where we are about to start a series on the inner villains, the parts of us that sabotage, control, or quietly hide when things get hard. These upcoming posts will walk you through how to recognize them, work with them, and eventually transform them. They're going to be a wonderful complement to what we're hearing here on TSF. And if you are a paid subscriber, you'll also get a new meditation each month to support that integration. You can find it all at ChristinaWiltse.substack.com or search The Life Alchemist. Thanks, y'all.